Welcome back to TechNet Radio. The scripting guy, Ed Wilson, is back for episode 2 of PowerShell Best Practices, and today he covers design functions and modules, how to deal with handle errors, the importance of documenting, testing, and troubleshooting scripts, as well as how to avoid those pesky scripting pitfalls. Blaine, the mic is yours.
Welcome to IT Time. I'm your host, Blaine Barton, Senior IT Pro Evangelist with Microsoft. And this is the second episode talking with Mr. Ed Wilson, the scripting guy around his new book, PowerShell Best Practices with version 2.0. So welcome, Ed. How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing good, Blaine.
Yeah, so Ed, just a little bit about him. He's a heavy hitter in the PowerShell world. Got an outstanding blog around PowerShell scripting. He's also a senior programming writer for PowerShell here at Microsoft. So welcome back to the second episode.
Thank you, Blaine.
You betcha. So let's just dive right in. Talk a little bit about design functions and modules. Can you expand on that a little bit?
Well, sure. If you think about a script, so a basic everyday script, Then it starts off, we do this, we do this, we do this, we do this. And that's fine. You know, and once you're done, if you need to change it, then you're going to have to go back in and modify the script and change it so that it can do this, this, and this. If you want to move up in the world and to begin to be able to reuse your code a little bit, then what you're going to want to do is to create a function. Now, it's not hard. The scripting wife can write functions. As a matter of fact, if you look at the recent series of Hey Scripting Guy articles where the scripting wife was there, she in fact did write a function. You know, you have the function keyword, you give it a name. Now, the name, you want to use a verb noun standard because that's the way all PowerShell commandlets are, such as, get BIOS. You know, would be a nice name for a function that would return information about the BIOS on your computer. The one that my scripting wife likes to use sometimes is canit script monkey. But canit is not an approved verb. You know, so she can't put that in a module. We actually have a check when we move from function to module in which we look for approved verbs. If you don't know what verbs are available, dude, it's get verb. Yeah, so that's the nice thing about verb noun standard. We use standard verbs, get, set, new, and so forth and so on. We have one that's called get date. Yeah, but my wife won't let me use that particular commandlet. So we go from a script, then we go to a function, and then if we want to collect these functions together, we put them into a module. Now, the nice thing about a module is that modules have a place to live. You know, so it's like, here's Buster Brown. He lives in a shoe. Well, here's your module. They live there too. Okay, so you put your modules in your user directory. And that module can contain multiple functions. Now, you don't have to have a module that is all related. You know, so I could create a hardware module. And I could just simply call it hardware module. We don't use verb noun for module names. And then in that, I could have get keyboard, get mouse, get BIOS, get disk drive, and commandlets like that that would give that information. Now, this also kind of moves in to the next thing that we want to talk about, though. And that is handling input and output. Right, Blaine?
Yep, that's right. So yeah, and let's dig into the input and output.
Okay, so once I've got my module then in there, then it's a nice place to put stuff that's related. But now, so I used get keyboard. Yeah, I really don't necessarily need input for that. I mean, I've only got one keyboard that's associated with my computer that my computer's going to tell me about. You know, actually, you know, I've got my my Game Boy wireless keyboard here that I use, or not Game Boy, but you know, whatever we're calling it nowadays. My Microsoft wireless keyboard, and then I've got my regular laptop keyboard, but the computer can't tell me about that wireless keyboard. You know, maybe in the next version we will be able to, but so it's just get keyboard. You know, I don't tell it which of how many keyboards I've got. However, you know, when I use get disk drive, then all of these, you know, little portable drives, you know, as well as the hard drive that's on my laptop, as well as this weird virtual app drive that's on my laptop, all of those things are there. So I could say, you know, get disk drive. Yeah, and if I wouldn't give it any parameters, then I would want to return all of the information about all of my drives. Okay, that goes back to you designing your function. Now, how am I going to give it input? Well, if I'm envisioning doing something like get disk drive, then maybe my input is a command line parameter. You know, and so I could give it a letter. You know, C, D, E, F, G, H, I, J, K. You know. Today's lesson is brought to you by the letter L. Yeah. All right. So we could do that if we want to. Or, you know, maybe this would be a little dorky, you know, but maybe I read a text file. Okay. And in there, I put the letters of the drives that I want. I don't know why I would do that, but I'm just giving it as an example. You know, or I could read it from a database. Now, the way that I envision using my function or my module is going to help me determine the way that I design my input. Okay, so do I imagine somebody using this interactively? You know, if so, then a command line parameter is going to work. You know, so you know, dash letter, blah blah blah, whatever, whatever. Now my output. Yeah, if it's something that's going to be used interactively, then more than likely I want to throw the output to the screen. Okay, but if I'm going to run it as a scheduled job, for instance, then I don't want to throw my output to the screen because there's nobody going to be there, you know. So it's like that philosophical question, you know, if a scheduled job writes to the screen and no one's there to read it, did the output actually show up on the screen?
Right, right.
So maybe that case we want to write to a database, write to a text file, or whatever. I can tell you from a performance perspective, you're probably faster writing to a text file. And then if you need it in your database, you know, then configure a job later on to pull those text files and throw it into your database. But if it's just a few drives, you know, then it's not going to matter. You know, so you could write directly to the database if you want to. So these are some of the considerations and some of the things, you know, that come into play when you're working, you know, designing your input and your output. Okay, so Blaine, you're an IT pro evangelist. So that means you're out there, you're talking with customers on a day-to-day basis. And a lot of times they say, well, this script is really slow or the script isn't working right. Well, what you've got to do is you have to think about the design of the script. You know, you could have the fastest language in the world, but if it's trying to do something that's not optimized, you know, then it's going to cause you problems.
Yes. Yeah. Well, speaking of problems, how do you handle things like handle errors, for example?
Well, interestingly enough, this is it's a question I get a lot of, obviously. Yeah, and people ask me about debugging scripts and stuff like that. You know, if you don't want to get into debugging scripts, then what you do is you handle the errors. Okay. Now, as far as handling errors, this again, you need to come back to how am I going to use this. So, for instance, if this is something that I'm going to be using myself on a regular basis, then I may not do any error handling at all. Well, what I'm talking about error handling. Well, if I've got a commandlet that gets back the disk drive information, yeah, and I designed the script so that I always have to give it a letter, okay, which I wouldn't necessarily want to do. I would rather handle a default condition that lists all of my drives and all the information. Yeah, but maybe this is something, you know, that you may have a whole bunch of stuff and you don't want to throw that out. So, so then I'm going to prompt for the drive letter, okay? So that by designing my input on there, that I can handle the potential situation in which, you know, you try to run the script and you don't give it a drive letter. But maybe you don't want to do that. Maybe you don't want that prompt because you're going to be running it as a scheduled task. Well, then what you need to do then is you need to check for a missing parameter. Okay, so you're gonna check then and say, you know, is my drive letter, you know, null? You know, is there anything there or not? And so you just check for the presence of it. That's a kind of a minimal check. Another way to handle that error would be to just simply define a default drive. So if you run the script and you don't give it a drive letter, then you assume drive C. In a Windows world, you're pretty safe in assuming that drive C is going to exist. Okay? But what if somebody gets froggy and types in the number 429? Don't know why they would do that, but they could. So then your script goes off and tries to check for a drive number 429. Which probably ain't going to work. Well, then the next level of checking, besides checking to ensure that a drive has been supplied, would be to say, is this a letter? Okay, as opposed to an integer or a number. Okay, and so we could do a simple check like that. We can define all of these inside there. We could, if you wanted to get rather sophisticated, you could even have a query that determines all the available drive letters and puts those drive letters in an array, and then you would check to see is the drive letter that's requested one of these available drive letters. Okay, and that would probably be at the highest end, you know, of error handling, you know, to ensure that the drive letter that was supplied is one of the drives that actually exists on your machine. Now, each of these, as we move up, increases complexity. So it depends on how are you going to use this. Now, I've got some scripts that I wrote, you know, 3 or 4 years ago, and I did like very little error handling. And then when I pull them up, I get ready to run them. I don't remember how to run the script. And so this kind of moves into the next section that we want to talk about, and that's documenting my scripts.
Yeah, let's go into that.
Okay. The way that you document your scripts then, again, kind of there's an investment. You know, at the very minimum, you want to add a comment. You know, it's like, hey, dummy, you know, you need to supply a letter of a script, a drive letter. Now, the only way you would see that comment would be if you opened up the script and looked at it. Yeah, and that's kind of an extra step that, depending on how the script's going to be used, you don't want, you know, normal people having to open up a script and look at it to see how to use it. For instance, if I write a script for Teresa, scripting wife, I don't want her opening that script up in a script editor. I want her to be able to just simply run the script. And so then the next thing that we can do is we can iterate in PowerShell 2, integrate with comment-based help. Now, this is very, very sophisticated, and it could actually be a little confusing or complicated. I wrote a series of scripting guide articles in which we add in the ability to add comment-based help into the Windows PowerShell ISE. Essentially, it's a module that runs when I open up PowerShell ISE. It's part of my profile. And then it adds a function that's called add help. And so then I just type in add help, press enter, and boom, it adds in all of the XML, it adds in all of the tags that are required for comment-based help, and it even throws in some default verbiage. So by using that function, I can add comment-based help to any script, and it takes less than 30 seconds. And then the nice thing is then I type get help, space, get disk drive, and it integrates in with the help subsystem in PowerShell, and it'll display all that information. So for a very little bit of work, you get a great amount of functionality. And that is my preferred method of documenting the script.
That's awesome. In fact, you know, in your book, the best practices for Windows PowerShell version 2.0, And even in the first episode we did, you talked about some of the advantages of the new features and commandlets within PowerShell, some of the scripting scenarios, configuring scripting environment, working with AD and WMI. And then this second episode here, you've covered, you know, things like design functions in those modules, right? Optimizing input output, handling errors, documenting the scripts so you remember, right? And then also testing and troubleshooting some of the scripts and avoiding some of those scripting pitfalls is also covered in your book. So I think we're going to go in the series here in the next episodes and talk specifically about some of those areas in the future to come. So with that, hey, Ed, it's been great. You're always a guest star on IT Time. And once again, Ed Wilson, senior programming writer for Microsoft. With that, anything else you'd like to add, Ed?
No, Blaine, just glad to have a chance to talk with you. And I enjoyed it.
Well, thanks for being on IT Time. Once again, I'm Blaine Barton, your host, and it's a wrap.